Blog Talk Radio.
There's a lot of moving parts here with just one name.
as you mentioned, just this trade alone can affect a lot of teams. And, you know, starting with Chicago, I think it's going to affect them, obviously, positively. There were murmurs of he and Jimmy Butler not getting along well, although that might have been stymied by Jimmy Butler's heartfelt Twitter or Instagram post about Derrick Rose and how he kind of took him under his wing and showed him how to be an NBA player, which I kind of found funny because how are you supposed to teach someone how to be an NBA player when you can't even stay on the court? But regardless of how they got along in the locker room, I think it's going to benefit Chicago and Jimmy Butler as, you know, they were both ball-dominating guards that needed to have the ball in their hands to make the plays or really maximize the talent, what they hold. And, you know, Jimmy Butler showed that he's an NBA All-Star. You know, when Rose wasn't on the court, he was a guy that was averaging over 20 points and averaging over 5 assists, and we all know how good he is defensively. So that doesn't really take into account anything with Rose leaving his defensive game, but he's going to be a lot more involved offensively. But, you know, Chicago missed the playoffs last year and was really a bad season for them. They let go of Tom Thibodeau, brought in Fred Hoiberg, who was from Iowa State, and, you know, going from Tom Thibodeau being a defensive coach, how just awesome this team was defensively. To go into last year, they were in the bottom of the barrel defensively, and they bring in an offensive coach, and they're horrible on offense. So while a lot of Chicago fans, I feel like you're on either side of the fence with Rose as a Chicago fan. You either dislike them because of the injuries and just, you know, not playing in the playoffs that one year when teammates were saying he could play, and or you either loved him as, you know, he was an MVP and taking them far into the playoffs. But so the effect on Chicago is Jimmy Butler is going to continue to be an all-star and be able to handle the basketball more. He's not going to be the point guard per se, but he's going to be able to dominate the ball and be that dominant force. So positive for Chicago in that respect, but I think their organization is in shambles right now. Letting Tom Thibodeau go was the worst mistake of this franchise could do. It's nothing on the players. I mean, they went from a very defensive mindset to trying to be one of the fastest-paced teams in the NBA without the players equipped to do so. When you talk about Joakim Noah, who's not an offensive threat to score the ball, he's known more for defense and passing. Rose couldn't stay on the court. And he was bad this year. So going to the Knicks, you know, I don't think it's going to be good for D-Rose and Knicks fans. I think Phil Jackson is just trying to make a splash and show that he's trying and willing to bring in players alongside Carmelo Anthony and Kristaps Porzingis to make a run at the postseason, let alone go back to the championship for the first time since 1981, I believe. And then there are rumors that Joakim Noah might be the next on the way to New York. And if he doesn't sign there, Dwight Howard is a target for Phil Jackson. Now, if Dwight Howard signs there, this is really going to put the fun in dysfunctional, because you got a guy in Derrick Rose who is injury prone and kind of gets involved in social media in the wrong ways. And then you got a guy with Dwight Howard who everywhere he's gone since Orlando, and even at the tail end of being in Orlando, he has caused problems in the locker room with Kobe Bryant, obviously. And then in Houston, it came out that he and James Harden weren't really getting along, and he wanted out of there. So what do you think is going to change if he goes to New York, team up with a player like Derrick Rose?
No, nothing. His attitude is his biggest problem, 100%.
Yeah.
There's clearly no issue with his skill set and his size and strength. It's purely attitude. And the only way that he'll ever learn, and obviously it won't happen because of his skill set, is if he's a free agent and people pass up on him and he's got to wait and wait and wait and wonder when his contract is going to come. And unfortunately, he's the type of talent that that's just not going to happen to.
He's
going to
get maxed out.
I know we're totally different too, but imagine if he got the Ian Desmond treatment from this offseason that Desmond got.
Right.
I think it might humble him just a little bit.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think, that's a very intelligent analogy there. And I think the only problem is, and I know you pretty much alluded to it, is his skill set won't translate to that ever happening. And the other thing is the new TV money that's coming in a year. We talked about it last week, Harrison Barnes. Players of Harrison Barnes, talent, are going to be max players. So Dwight Howard.
Yeah,
bounds.
Great point. We were talking about that last week, and it's ridiculous, but that's just what the sports are coming to, especially basketball now with their TV money just coming in. The baseball's TV money came in, I think, this year or last year, and they already had ridiculous contracts even before that.
Right. Yeah, so a player like Dwight Howard, he's going to get maxed out wherever he goes. And, I think there are GMs out there that are smart enough to say, no way, I'm not touching a guy like him, and I'd rather max out a guy like Harrison Barnes, who is a locker room guy and may not have the talent that Dwight Howard does, but he's not going to bash your team on social media or try to get a coach fired a la Stan Van Gundy. Brown, the coach of the Lakers that got fired, it was probably more so Kobe getting that done than Dwight Howard. But pretty much wherever Dwight Howard has gone, there's been a coaching change. Same thing in Houston.
Follow him,
Yeah. Yeah, so
he either follows him or brings it wherever he goes.
Yes.
Never want to use this word, obviously, but he's kind of like a cancer to organizations.
Yeah, definitely. Certainly.
He affects them from the inside. And there's not really a cure, except for getting rid of him.
Yeah, exactly. That's it there. And wrapping up the road thing.
Let's talk a little bit about KD. Because KD, although we both agreed it's likely he might sign a one-year deal with OKC, it's got to be tough when you're caliber of KD. You are a good locker room presence. You're not like a Dwight Howard. You're arguably top three or four player in the world. You're going to have everyone coming at you and coming at you big. So if you're Kevin Durant, do you wait another year, sign a one-year deal, or do you try and get max money right now and join a team that's already in place that you think you can take to the next level? If so, name me a couple teams you think would be best fits for him.
Well, he's going to take a one-year no matter where he goes because it's a smart thing to do, obviously.
I guess
he could go to that team.
Yeah,
he's gonna sign the 1 year, and even if he knows he's gonna stay in that franchise, he could just sign the 1 year, finish that 1 year, wipe his hands, and get the max money with the new TV deal. It's just it's the way it's gonna happen. It's not if. It's just because the way the money is, and it'd just be stupid not to do so, but. Yeah, he's going to hit the free agent market. He did already. It happened yesterday, I believe. But there's six teams that he's going to have supposed meetings with. He has yet to make a meeting with the Knicks, which there have been rumors that he's at least just going to meet with them to see what they say. And, you know, that New York is the mecca of basketball, they say. I don't know how true that is anymore. I think that's more so a thing of the past. But the Warriors, Spurs, home team Thunder, Celtics, the Heat, and the Clippers. Now, Warriors, obviously, we saw what they've done in the last two seasons, and they had a guy like Kevin Durant. It's just going to be unfair to other basketball teams.
Might as well just hand them the NBA championship right then and there if they get Kevin Durant. I'm sorry, but any competitive advantage or disadvantage that exists in sports would be – this would set a brand new precedent for it, because if you thought LeBron joining Bosch and Wade in Miami was crazy and unfair, and I know you don't because you like LeBron, and I do too, and I thought it was a smart decision by LeBron, and let's not get on that topic. But Kevin Durant joining the Golden State Warriors would be – just unfair. Like, the way the league vetoed Chris Paul to the Lakers, they would find a way to not let that happen because it would just ruin basketball.
Yeah, it would be unreal, and unless an injury to Kevin Durant or Curry or maybe Draymond Green, with all systems go,
they might win eight games.
Yeah, I couldn't see a team. You know, they might not try all that much during the regular season, and especially after this regular season where they set the record and then they lost. Maybe they think in the future, hey, let's maybe get some rest at the tail end here. But speaking of playoffs, I don't think they lose a game, and then going into the championship. If they lost a game, I'd be surprised, and especially against the Eastern Conference team. Let's just assume
that
they
even play in Cleveland. The only team they even have a chance of playing in the East would be Cleveland if LeBron stays. Who's going to beat Cleveland? The Raptors? I mean, you know, I love the Raptors, but we saw what happened this year. And the best the Raptors are going to do is bring back DeRozan.
And facing Cleveland, I would be surprised, even with LeBron, even if he played like he did this championship. You got to guard a guy like Curry, Kevin Durant, and Klay Thompson, all from the perimeter. Like, give me a break. There's not a chance. It's tough covering one of those guys, alone three of them on the court at the same time. And Golden State, the only chops they would have to make to pull in max money for Kevin Durant is cut a guy like Andrew Bogut and Harrison Barnes. And Festus Ezeli. Those three guys. Bogut wasn't on the floor. Obviously, he got hurt. And that was a bigger blow than a lot of people think in the championship. But then Festus Ezeli did nothing in the championship. He only played because Bogut was hurt. And then we talked about Harrison Barnes, who played himself maybe out of a max deal, couldn't shoot the ball to the side of a barn door.
Definitely played
him
out of a deal with Golden State for a lot of money, that's for sure.
So, put a guy like Kevin Durant in where Harrison Barnes was, and that series, and it's not even funny. The Warriors, obviously, that's it.
Before we move on, what happens to a team like OKC if they lose Durant? Like, does Westbrook leave eventually, or do they go out and they try and find a replacement for Durant so they can still be one of those strong forces in the West?
I think they would definitely try to do so. But out of the two guys, Durant and Russell Westbrook, who Russell can hit the free agent market next year, I think if KD goes, Russell's gone. He's a L.A. guy. We know the Lakers are going to have money to spend. They got a young nucleus there. I think, you know, if you put Durant
Bro,
and Westbrook.
Bro, I'm still standing by my bold prediction from a couple of weeks ago. I forget what show it was. It was last week or the week before. And that's LeBron and KD both being Lakers, not next season, but the season after that. They're both going to go to L.A. and win a championship there.
I would love that. And that's the one thing I'll talk about with you with that in a second after I just say what I was going to say about Russell, which is, and I think you'd agree and tell me if I'm wrong, that I feel like if KD's gone, then Russell's definitely not going to stay. And if you were to look at either of those players and which one would more likely just jump ship and leave, I think that guy would be Russell Westbrook. I think he'd be more like he wants to be the guy no matter where he is. And I think that he doesn't have ties to OKC other than being drafted there. And I feel like he'd just up and leave and go play in LA because he's going to be free agent next year. And if Kevin Durant's not there, why not? Like, who is he going to be playing with? Deion Waiters? Like, why not go
Serge Ibaka,
to LA? Yeah.
Oh, wait, no.
Why not?
Wasn't Serge Ibaka traded?
Yeah, he was traded to Orlando Magic for Oladipo, which I think is awesome. And Sabonis.
A good trade for
him.
Who is that a better trade for?
OKC, I think, won the trade by miles. They got Ersan Ilyasova, who obviously is not Serge Ibaka, and definitely not defensively, but they have Steven Adams there, who was lights out in the playoffs defensively. And then you get a guy like Ersan Ilyasova, who can shoot like Serge Ibaka, if not better, from mid-range and three. And then they get a guy like Vic Oladipo, who is kind of the de facto James Harden, but a James Harden that can play defense. Obviously, he's not the offensive scorer that James Harden is, but OKC has really been lacking that kind of six man, if you will, that can really score the ball outside of Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. So I think Kevin Durant's going to stick around after meeting with these six teams and kind of play this season with Oladipo and Ilyasova and see if OKC can make another couple moves to bolster their bench. And I think this is a revamped squad, and we saw how close they were to the NBA championship. I think it'd be stupid for Kevin Durant to move on right now. Might as well just sign them 1 year with OKC and get the same amount of money that you're going to get from any other team for this 1 year, and then wait and see for next year.
But think about it from this perspective, Zach, for a second. I don't disagree with what you're saying, but Durant's issue is that they've only – correct me if I'm wrong, OKC's only gone to the championship once, right?
Correct, yes, yep.
So don't you think Durant has an easier road to the ship, at least to make the championship in the Eastern Conference?
Certainly
especially
does.
Especially if he's joining a team that's already good.
Yeah, he certainly does. But the only thing there is, you know, if you don't go to any other team in Cleveland, then you're gonna be going, trying to go through LeBron, who just won the championship.
Wouldn't you rather go through only LeBron, Zach, than have to go through the Warriors, the Spurs, the Clippers, maybe even the Grizzlies? Like, there's a lot of good teams in the West. There's only one really good team in the East.
Definitely. Certainly would only rather go through one team, you know. I just think if he's eyeing up this year, I mean, it's a tough argument you bring up there because, you know, you're going through one team, but you're going to be joining a team that doesn't have as much talent as a Western Conference team that he could join. When you're thinking about other teams that he could join and the Spurs that he's going to be visiting with, imagine that, you know, joining up forces with Marcus Aldridge, Kawhi Leonard, Tony Parker, him going there
would be an amazing for him to go to. I don't like the Spurs, but that would be amazing.
Nor do I.
For Durant, so
that would almost
100%.
Be unfair as well. But lastly, real quickly, so we can move on. the KD and LeBron thing, I think that's something that nobody is talking about at all. I haven't heard one major sports outlet. I've typed it in on Google to see if anybody's talking about it. It's Kevin Durant and LeBron James teaming forces. We know they're really good friends. LeBron signing the one-year deals so he can go anywhere whenever he wants. Kevin Durant is going to sign a one-year deal. Who's to say that they don't go to a team like L.A. or New York that's going to have a ton of cap space and join forces and try to win championships?
They're both desperate to get back to the playoffs, too. They're both so desperate to get back to the playoffs, especially the Lakers.
Right.
They're such an historic franchise. Them not being in the playoffs is like the Yankees not being in the playoffs, at least for us growing up.
Right. So that's something nobody's talking about, and I think it's a real possibility because of their friendship and because of the TV money is going to allow teams, obviously. There's already teams that have 2-3 max players on a team. It's going to allow guys like LeBron and Kevin Durant to go join forces, or LeBron and Carmelo, Chris Paul. There's all these rumors out there, and it's going to be real exciting in a year to see what happens. And I think a lot of people are going to be mad about these guys are just teaming up, but it's just...
No offense to Miami, but Melo, LeBron, and Durant in New York is just so much better than Bosh, Wade, and LeBron. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't
definitely.
Even care.
Yeah, certainly.
I would take
certainly.
Melo over Bosh any day. I would take Durant over Wade any day at this point. So this was 10 years ago. Durant was in the league, and Wade was just, like, breaking in. It might be a better argument here, but at this point, Durant and Melo are so much better than Wade and Bosh. And LeBron
is certainly
just as good, if not better, as an overall player now than he was then, because he's learned so much and become a better team player.
Right. Certainly.
Plus, he has three championships. Three championships
yep.
under his belt now, too. So, if I'm LeBron, I did what I needed to do for Cleveland. I'll stay one more year, but now it's all about my legacy and how many championships
I can win. Let me ask you one question.
I don't see them winning a number of championships with Cleveland.
Right. Let me ask you one quick question. How many championships is it going to take LeBron for there to be a true argument of LeBron being the greatest of all time over Michael Jordan? Is he going to take 6?
In my opinion, I don't think he really does need it anymore. I think he's proven himself. But in the general public's opinion, he needs at least 5 to even be considered the top 5 NBA player. If you ask Charles Barkley, for instance, he doesn't even have LeBron in his top 5 NBA players of all time, which I think is ludicrous. It makes sense because of the era that Barkley's from and playing against some of the guys he named and watching some of the guys he named.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Bill Russell or Michael Jordan. And I forget 2 of the other guys he mentioned. And they were all phenomenal basketball players. But I don't think we've ever seen a talent like LeBron James's.
Even Michael Jordan said in the game today, these guys would have jumped over me. That's how the game, like, just athletically, the game has evolved. And Jordan even alluded to it. He said, you know, if I played in NBA today with the skill set that I had, these guys would be jumping over me. It just goes to show how much things have evolved.
Well, Zach, did you ever grow up going to, like, camp or anything where you played the game leapfrog? Yeah, well, that's all I see when I watch LeBron play. He just leapfrogs over everybody.
Right. That is for sure.
The guy's the greatest leapfrog player in the history of leapfrog, for sure. He may not be the best NBA player, but he's got leapfrog.
For sure.
Yeah, 100%. He rivals MJ in a leapfrog, 100%. Let's move over let's go down the road to Las Vegas here, at least down the road from me. And the NHL is going to Las Vegas. And there are a lot of people that say this isn't going to work. It's going to be an epic fail. I'm not sure I agree with that, though. What about this, in your opinion, would make this a fail? Whether it's NHL, just pro sports in Vegas in general, why do you think people are thinking this is going to be a failure and it's not going to work? And tell me what you think about it and if you think other teams are going to be headed there as well. Teams and sports, sorry.
I don't think it's going to be a failure. The argument that I've heard about people thinking that it could be a failure is obviously we know sports gambling in Las Vegas, it's legal, and players playing in Las Vegas. And you hear about it all the time, and it happens a lot in the NBA. Players, you know, when they travel or they go, you know, traveling to, say, New York to play the Knicks, then after the game, they all get a bus and go to Atlantic City and go gamble. And, you know, there's rumors of Michael Jordan being suspended from the league. That's why he went to go play baseball, because he owed the league money, or he was gambling a crazy amount, and the NBA suspended him, but they didn't want to blow up their biggest player at the time. So he just went and played baseball until the quote-unquote suspension was gone. So there's worry that, players...
If that's true, it really makes you wonder about Pete Rose.
Right. And so there's worry that players in Las Vegas, having this easy access to sports gambling can go make a bet and go throw a game for their team and make a lucrative money decision to throw a game.
I totally see what you're saying, and I don't think you're saying that you think this is the case. You're just arguing the point for people, right?
Yeah.
To that, and let me know what you think, is that if these guys really want to make a bet, they'll get a bet done. Because I don't think these guys have friends in Vegas or friends that can go to Vegas and be like, put this amount of money on this team and I'm going to have a bad game tonight and, we'll make money.
Right.
If they really wanted to do it, they'd find ways to do it. Being in Vegas is not going to make or break that, in my opinion. I think there should be at least one professional sports team in Vegas. It is one of the entertainment capitals of the world. And sports is just as much entertainment as anything else. I mean, if you can have strippers and strip clubs and prostitution is legal and all that, then why on earth should there not be sports there?
Certainly, and I agree. As you said, my argument is just the argument to people against it, but my argument to coincide with what you said is there's too many athletes out there that work their whole life to make it into the professional sport. Let's say 97% of these guys have worked their whole life to make it to professional levels. There's the 3%, let's say, not to say Bryce Harper or LeBron James don't work their tail off, because we know, especially with LeBron, the work ethic that he had to make it to where he is. But, some of these guys kind of just have that build and have what it takes. It's in their blood to become a pro. But let's say 95 to 97% of these guys work their butts off to get here. And at any time, at the least, you're going to have five people on the court or on the ice. And then, obviously with football, there's 11, baseball, 9. Even if we're talking soccer, there's 10, 11. You can't just have one guy bet to throw a game and have the game thrown. There's going to be at least four other guys that you'd have to try and get on your side to be like, hey, let's not play so well tonight. And that's not going to fly. You can't just have one guy toss a game and have it work out because there's too many professional athletes that do this because they love it and they've worked so hard at it that you're not going to have this problem of guys throwing a game per se, because you're going to have all these other guys pushing their hardest to win. So I just don't think it's a viable argument. While, you know, one player can try to throw it, it's not going to push a game really either way. So I think the NHL is going to see mass success with this. And we talked about it a little bit on our Saturday show with Corey. I think it's not too long until we see at least 3 or 4 sports in Las Vegas.
Absolutely, and before we move on, I mean, I think the most obvious one and the closest one would probably be the NFL and the Oakland Raiders. Oakland is not going to be in Oakland for very long. There were rumors that them and St. Louis were going to come to L.A. St. Louis obviously is doing that, and they are no longer St. Louis. They are the L.A. Rams again, which is exciting. San Diego is another option, but I think San Diego has a better chance of staying in San Diego and in California than the Raiders do. I don't see a team going there in MLB yet. I also don't know if there's been talks of expansion to Las Vegas in the MLB, but that doesn't really make sense because you're not going to have 31 teams. And the only team, in my opinion, that I could see potentially leaving where they are currently in Major League Baseball would be Tampa. And Tampa's not going to Las Vegas because then you got to reshift all the divisions. It would just be a complete mess. So that's I don't see it there. In the NBA, I don't think that it's really necessary at this point. NHL makes sense because it just wasn't happening in Arizona/Phoenix, which is already in the desert anyway, so it makes sense. And it's not working in Oakland, but they're close to Vegas. It does just make a lot of sense, or some of the other ones
right.
that don't. If Oakland is going to go to Las Vegas, when do you think this would happen? Do you think it could happen as early as not this season starting up in September, but the one after?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility. Like you said, there's rumors of both teams moving to L.A., so I think as quickly as they could have both been playing in L.A., we could see a team in Las Vegas. And the only thing I could argue about the NBA and maybe the MLB is that these are all businesses, and they're all businessmen at the top trying to make as much money as they can, and I think we'll see.
Keep in mind, Zach, there is a minor league team, baseball, in Las Vegas. I know it's not the same thing as a major pro sport, but there is still
right.
a professional baseball team in Las Vegas. So they do have that already, which could also cause problems because that minor league team would lose a ton of their money and their fans and all that too. So that would create a serious problem.
Right.
It's not like the Las Vegas team would be affiliated with the Las Vegas affiliate, I believe, is affiliated with the New York Mets.
Yeah, and I think we'll see a packed stadium for all these hockey games and other sports. We'll see how lucrative it is for the NHL, and they'll try to do what they can to get a team.
That's the thing about hockey. The thing about hockey is active. It's not like the NFL or the MLB. The stadiums only fit about 18 to 20,000 people.
Yeah, right.
Fill that, then it's still 40 or 50 or even 70 like some of the NFL stadiums.
NFL,
so it won't be hard to get 13 or 15,000 people in the hockey stadium and make it look extremely full and extremely exciting. And, you know, they'll get ice girls and, you know, they'll have dancers and, like, they'll jazz it up.
Certainly.
They'll make it a lot of environment, 100%.
Environment, right. Certainly will. And, you know, just thinking of all the things that come along with, you know, all the intricacies that are not thought of when a team moves. You know, we think about just filling stadiums, but then you think jersey sales, the tax revenue, concessions, all those things add up, and it's going to become very lucrative for the NHL. And I could see, obviously, the NFL, and then for the NBA, they're always looking to expand and do what's best for the NBA. We saw it with David Stern, who actually, you know, was not liked a lot, but he was well-renowned for getting – the NBA known globally, getting players to go and do things overseas, and you know, kids in China wearing Kevin Durant LeBron jerseys. So they're trying always to expand, maybe not, you know, moving teams overseas, but getting their sport noticed, and they've done a good job of making the NBA more popular, and I think they'll see an opportunity to do so in Las Vegas as well. And there's, you know, thoughts of moving a team back to Seattle with Sacramento. So, you know, there's a couple teams in California there that wouldn't be too far of a move. So, like I said, I think we'll see a couple other sports be moving there in the not so distant future.
Should be very exciting, man. Let's move over to some NFL talk quickly, and very hot topic that we've discussed on pretty much every show we've ever done together, man. And that is Tom Brady and the suspension and Deflategate and blah, 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 blah. And the bottom line is, of course, Brady is appealing his suspension again. He was granted an extension to appeal this. And is there any validity to this appeal? Like, is the NFL really going to embarrass themselves and reduce it again? Or do you think this is going to be upheld and he will be missing these first four games?
I think he'll miss the first four games. Just because I think they made an ASS.
The emotions, you think? You don't think that is actually going to be an overruling or anything like that? You think he has to do what he has to do to save face, go through the motions, have his high-powered legal team do everything they can possible? But at the end of the day, the NFL, you think, is going to stand strong and just say, nah, man, like, you cheated, we caught you, just sit out and then continue to play football. We'll never have to talk about this garbage again.
Yeah, I think the NFL will stand strong, and they made an ASS out of themselves last year. Not even with it getting overruled, but just the whole process of it, the whole media coverage of it.
You're cutting out. I'm only hearing every other word.
Just saying that the NFL made an ASS out of themselves, the whole media coverage, just how they handled it. Was just a fiasco, and I think they're not willing to do that again. I think they're, you know, gonna uphold and make him serve the four games and set a precedent that, hey, if you do things in a NFL type fashion, that you're gonna have to pay for it. And not just that, but I think that a lot of people like myself, and not just because I'm a Bills fan and I just like the Patriots, but I think a lot of people all around football feel like the NFL and the Patriots and Roger Goodell kind of have this bromance, if you will.
For some reason, you're cutting out every other word. So let's let's move on to baseball, and maybe it will bring us some luck and the connection will get a little stronger. Are you hearing me okay?
I am hearing you okay. Did you just hear my sentence okay?
No, see, I heard you say, did you hear my, and then, like, you know, it started cutting out. But let's go over to baseball. Chicago Cubs, like I mentioned in the opening, easily the best team in baseball through the first 2 months of this season, if not into the middle of June. But lately they're sliding a little bit. They're proving that they are human. And the San Francisco Giants have been beyond consistent since the start of May. And the Texas Rangers have really come on strong in the American League. And I don't think it's safe to say anymore that the Cubs are the best team in baseball. They have some weaknesses. They are dealing with some injuries. And the Giants appear to be a complete team even without Hunter Pence. And Texas just has so much depth and so much skill all over the field. I know their pitching staff has taken some hits with injuries, but they're still surviving. So if I had to ask you right now, would you agree with me that Texas is the best team in the American League?
Yes, I agree with you there.
And I heard that, by the way, so that's good news.
Sweet.
And in the National League, who do you think is the better team right now, the Giants or the Cubs? And when I say better team, Let's not discuss postseason because it's still over 3 months away. I think if they matched up right now in the postseason, I'd go with the Giants purely because of that top three in the rotation. Nothing against Lackey, Lester, or Arrieta. It's fantastic, but I don't want to mess with Bumgarner, Cueto, and Samardzija right now, or the Cubs, or the Giants in an even year. But just head-to-head right now, during the regular season, let's say they matched up against the same three opponents for a nine-game stretch, who do you like more right now in the National League, the Giants or the Cubs?
I'm still going to go with the Cubs, even with the recent struggles. I feel that they just have a lot more young depth. You know, they've dealt with injuries, Soler, Schwarber, obviously, but they brought up Wilson Contreras, who's been on fire. You know, the guys like Rizzo and Bryant haven't been playing.
Things going on with your connection, man. I wonder what is going on because I hear like every other word.
All right, well, you carry on. I'm gonna call back in.
You're gonna call back in. Okay, I'll go on a rant then. So yeah, with the Cubs, there's no doubt that the whole lineup is super deep. I mean, guys like Almora are up now. The catcher Contreras is up now. They're moving him around. He's played catcher. He's played first base. He's played left field. There's no shortage of skill on this team. But they are still losing ball games, and it's not about how good you are on paper. It's about how you play on the field. And we saw them struggle in the playoffs last year against good pitching because although these hitters are so talented, they are still all very young. They strike out at a very high rate. And although they brought in Zobrist, who was one of the league leaders last year in not swinging and missing, they're still swinging and missing a little too much, the Cubs. And the Giants have just proven they know how to win. And with that being said, you really want to bet against the Giants in an even year. Even without Hunter Pence, they've shown that they are beyond skillful, dominant. The Dodgers are pretty good, but the Giants also have a much easier division to contend in than the Cubs do, and that's also going to help them record-wise. And this is the type of series, if these two were to meet in the postseason, let's say, that would probably come down to home field advantage and how well their top two or three pitchers did. Thoughts on that, Zach?
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. I mean, I heard the last portion of what you said there, and it's really hard to decipher between, you know, my heart saying the Cubs, but my head saying for all the reasons that you mentioned, the Giants. I just feel that, you know, say it depends. You know, when you brought the question right now, I guess yeah, I'd be taking the Giants. For all the reasons you said, but I think if we moved maybe a month forward, not even in the postseason, but say the Cubs get everyone back and everyone is kind of hitting. We know Jason Hayward's been in just an awful slump. Rizzo and Bryant haven't been themselves as of late. But I think a lot of the guys on the Giants have been playing a little bit over their heads as of late as well. And I think if it did come down to the postseason, yeah, it is an even year. But I'd actually have to disagree a little bit. We saw Cueto last year in the postseason. He was dominant. But even last night.
Well, he
night,
also had his struggles, too. He did have some struggles.
Yeah.
He was great in the World Series.
Right. And last night he showed a chink in his armor against the Phillies, and he's had some weird numbers against the Phillies. They showed it yesterday that he had an ERA of like 5 in his last 3 starts against the Phillies and showed last night. And I think Jeff Samardzija, I don't know, I just can never trust that guy. I feel like he has a propensity to blow up. And I feel like, you know, Arrieta, who is shown to be human as of late, is still a dominant force. I think, right now, maybe I take Bumgarner today, but I think if we were going overall, I don't know, that's tough. What do you, if you had to start your team with one pitcher not named Kershaw, And it was, say you had your first pick and it had to be Bumgarner or Arrieta, who would you start your franchise with? Because for me, I'd say Arrieta, but I think that might be recency bias, and I think Bumgarner is showing a better track record of dominance, and Arrieta's kind of a shiny new toy.
I'm going Bumgarner 100%. And that has nothing against Arrieta. I think Arrieta is still an elite pitcher, one of the best around. But I like left-handers. I like a guy like Bumgarner who's been good since he emerged into as a major leaguer. I mean, you have to remember that when he first joined the Giants, he was like third or fourth in the rotation.
Right.
And he's been part of – he's the only – he's one of the only players left on this team besides Buster Posey, I think. Maybe Sergio Romo, that was in there for every single championship that the Giants have had
right.
over the last six seasons. He's been a major part, and we know how big he was in their last one. When I start a franchise, yes, I want to get to the postseason, of course, but I'm thinking winning in the postseason, and maybe that's because I grew up a Yankees fan, and every single year it was win or bust.
Right.
And the Yankees built their team specifically to win in the postseason. They expected to get there. And that's kind of what the Giants have done, I think, with this team now. The Cubs as a team, and a team like the Cubs, team like the Blue Jays, teams that rely on the home run, typically falter in the playoffs.
Yep.
They get to the playoffs, but they typically falter there. And I believe, and I'm not looking at the stats, but I mean, I'm pretty good at remembering them. I believe the Giants are towards the bottom of Major League to home runs per game. But yet, they are up there in runs per game. So clearly, they're manufacturing runs the same way a team like the Royals did last year. And that's the way to win in the postseason, is with pitching and manufacturing runs. If you're relying on home runs, you're not going to hit them because you're going up against the best. You're not going up against the fours and fives anymore. You're going up against the best of the best. And teams like the Cubs, who have such a great offense but have such issues striking out, you saw what happened last year against the Mets when they met good pitchers. Good pitching beats good hitting. And at the end of the day, I'm going with a team that can manufacture runs and who has proven to pitch in the postseason. I guess you can argue, though, that Lester and Lasky have both been wonderful postseason pitchers as well. So that is obviously something to consider for the Cubs. In fact, you can definitely argue, and you'd be right, in my opinion, that Lester and Lackey are much more proficient playoff pitchers than Cueto and Samardzija have ever been and will ever be.
Yeah, and that's the only thing I was going to say. And you're right, San Francisco is 29th in the majors in home runs. And as you said, the teams that hit home runs in the postseason usually falter, but If you look back at those teams, the Torontos, you know, even looking at like a team like Baltimore or Boston, who's hit a lot of home runs, but you know, Toronto last year they didn't have pitching depth. They had David Price and nothing else really. Stroman was coming off an ACL and was okay in the postseason, but none of those teams had an Arrieta, Lackey, and Lester. And that's what I was going to point out is. We know the dominance that Lackey and Lester have had in postseason performances, and you add those guys behind a number one like Arrieta, who you know, might be one of the most dominant pitchers in baseball when his stuff is on. He has four different pitches that he could put at any side of the plate when he wants to, and when he has all that going, he's one of the best. So, you know, you add in those young boppers, and you think, yeah, they're going to strike out a lot. And yes, they will. But they had a guy like Zobrist, who's played in the playoffs before. And you add those two pitchers who have pitched many of times in the postseason. And I think you have a recipe for success. You look at a team like the Mets who made it there last year with their pitching, but look how god-awful their lineup is right now. They can't freaking get a run right now. They can barely hit a run. They have James Loney and Kelly Johnson being part of their line, like integral part of their lineups. It's bad, but I think I'm still going to get back to your original question. I'm going to take the Cubbies as the best team in the NL if I had to pick one right now.
Well, that brings me to our final discussion then today, as we only have about 5 or so minutes. Anyways, who is the best team in baseball? Are we going to stick with one of these NL teams, or do we like a team in the American League, whether it be Texas or a team that started slowly, like maybe the Houston Astros, for instance? We should talk about them a little bit because a month ago they were in worse place than even my boys, the Yankees. They were like 12 or something games under 500, but they've been on fire lately. I mean, Altuve, he might be an MVP candidate. Springer has been incredible and stayed healthy. We know how good Correa is. Keuchel's obviously not been Keuchel from last year, but he's definitely settled back into being a proven top-of-the-rotation type of guy. And if they get some pitching, and definitely out of any team out there besides maybe the Cubs, the Astros have as much as anybody to trade to bring in other pieces. They are loaded in that system because they were so bad for so long. We've only seen a couple of the type of players they can bring up. I mean, they still have a kid named Alex Bregman who has to move because of Correa, and this is a kid that could be the second or third best hitter on this team next year. They are loaded.
Yeah.
And he's not the type of guy they'll trade, but you might see them trade a guy like A.J. Reed, who's their first base prospect, who has been awful in the minor leagues this year after an incredible season last year. And I believe he's been called up to the majors now.
He played last night.
I think it might be more of an audition for teams that might be interested in acquiring him, and the Astros might use him as a trade chip to bring in a rotation guy, maybe like a Sonny Gray, or maybe, talk to a team like the Pirates. I've heard rumors of Francisco Liriano potentially being on the block as well, as they've struggled and haven't had the type of season that they were expecting to have.
Yeah, certainly. I think maybe they could, now that they're back in this thing, we saw them bring up A.J. Reed, and he played last night. You talk about Bregman moving to third because of Correa. I think if they really think that they're back in this thing, that they bring him up, because I think he's obviously a clear upgrade over a guy like Luis Valbuena. So I think we could see Bregman. I think that's a great point that, they brought up Reed maybe as a showcase now that they feel like they're back in it, and he could definitely be a chip to trade. When we talk about this team getting back in the race and, Keuchel coming back down to earth in a good way, he wasn't flying high. He was flying low, like in the mantle of the earth, and he came back to the ground for once, and came up out of the ground back to being a good pitcher. And Lance McCullers, who's a guy who's a strikeout machine, he's got over a K per nine, and seems to have his command a little bit.
Mike Fires hasn't been bad either.
Right, he hasn't
too bad.
And Hugh hasn't been awful.
McHugh hasn't been great, but he's
been better as of late. And then a guy like Carlos Gomez, who was awful, got awful, has now finally started to hit a little bit. That's helpful at the bottom of their order to get a guy who was thought to maybe be an all-star type player, a perennial all-star, then was traded to the Mets, had that hit back injury, and ended up on the Astros and really faltered. But he's starting to hit. And then Evan Gattis, who was sent down to the minors to begin the season because he couldn't hit a beach ball, and he's starting to mash now. So this team
and
is coming back
catcher.
In the race.
And playing
catcher
has a lot of depth to their lineup. And, the biggest struggle to me for the Astros in the first month of the season was Keuchel wasn't pitching, and their best hitter outside of Altuve was Colby Rasmus. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yes, Colby Rasmus was on fire. He's significantly cooled down because he's not the player that he was in April. But when Colby Rasmus is hitting the best for you and you have players like Springer and Correa, that's a bit of a problem because Springer, Correa, and Altuve is the core of that lineup. And if they aren't hitting well, then the Astros aren't going to go that far. We know how good both Altuve and Correa is, how good Springer is. And like you mentioned, Valbuena, he's not a bad ball player, but there's not a lot of upside. And Marwin Gonzalez is really more served as a great utility infielder.
Yeah.
But he's not, shouldn't be a guy that's starting at either first or third base either. So you got to figure that they might want to bring up Bregman and give themselves that shot in the arm that they did last year when they brought up Correa. Not to say that Bregman's going to have Correa numbers, but this is a guy that can easily hit 280 with 15 home runs over the next 3 months.
Certainly. Certainly. I agree. Oh, well, that's definitely going to be interesting. And then I'd have to say last week, because we don't have a lot of time, is just what's evolved here in the AL Central. We talked about both Chicago teams being lights out to start the season with the White Sox being the other team. God, have they fallen off. And the Indians have kind of gotten that shot in the arm from the Cavaliers, kind of getting in a winning way here. They won 9 in a row, and they're clear division leaders. So that's
oh, they're absolutely, without a doubt, the best team and most complete team in that division, 100%.
Yeah.
No one can argue it. And it's funny because a couple of weeks ago I was talking to Kyle on the baseball show, and I was like, so is the Central a two-team race now, Cleveland and KC? He's like, no, like Detroit, Chicago, blah, blah, blah. At this point, I don't see Chicago being a playoff team. I think they're better than they have been playing, but they're not as good as they were in the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Detroit, too inconsistent and too old to me. They're kind of like the Yankees, in my opinion. They have the names and they have talent, but they're not playing well, and they're old. And there's other teams that are just better than them. The Royals are good, and I would never count the Royals out. They've proven that you shouldn't count them out. But Cleveland is just really, really solid. And now that they have Carrasco back, that rotation is probably the deepest and most consistent in the American League. I mean, when you have Tomlin and Bauer pitching the way they are at the end of a rotation behind Kluber, Carrasco, and Salazar, you're in good shape. They're getting home run production. Remember early in the season, or even, preseason, we were talking about the Indians, and you did your article, you were a little down on Carlos Santana and whatnot. And I agree with you on the basis of he hasn't hit for a good average, but he has a great on-base percentage, and he has displayed power potential. He's on pace for over 30 home runs now. Mike Napoli has been a really good clubhouse guy for them. Lindor hasn't skipped a beat. Kipnis is still okay. Juan Uribe, although old and, a little chunky, he's also a good clubhouse guy. He's been good. Lonnie Chisenhall has done his job in the outfield. Ross I. Davis done his job in the outfield. If this team gets Michael Brantley back, they don't even necessarily need to make a deadline move.
Right.
They are the most complete team in the Central, I think. They have a good enough lineup, great starting pitching, and their bullpen, they could use maybe a bullpen piece, like a 7th-8th inning guy to go with, I think, like Shaw and Reed, and I think they have one other mainstay I'm blanking right now.
Manship or McAllister.
Yeah, either way, like their bullpen's good. It's just not great.
Yeah.
I think they could probably use a corner outfielder and a bullpen piece, and they'd be complete. But they're definitely the elite in their division and would be a very tough team to face in the division series, if not best of 7 series as well. Anything else you want to talk about from the baseball standpoint? Do you have any brain busters for me, or you want to wrap?
No, I think we hit it all there, bud. We're definitely over a little time here. I think we could talk baseball till it gets dark here or there. So I think we crushed it per use, and I will be talking to you Saturday. So from the best in the West to the beast in the East, our sports, the Fae, is getting put away.
Yeah, we're cleaning it up, but there will be leftovers throughout the week. So if you miss something or you're hungry, you can always tune in and catch what we talked about here today. And with regards to Saturday, Zach, I'm looking forward to our show, 1 p.m. Is it 1 p.m. Eastern? It is 1 p.m. Eastern. 1 p.m. Eastern to 2:30 p.m. Eastern. I believe we're moving over to the NFC East, so you're going to have a fun show, obviously, as I talk about the Cowboys and make
no doubt
bold statements that will not come true. that's really about it, man. everyone listening, that was Zach Sauer, and I'm Lou Landers. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be back next week on Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern. Have a great day and a great week.